Welcome to the Vibe Lifter podcast. I'm Tish, one of the Reglan Food co-founders, and I'm here to help lift your vibe with inspiring stories from people out in their local communities doing good mahi. So settle in and let's meet our guest of the day. Today, we're chatting with Wendy Jo from Perfectly Imperfect, a vegetable enthusiast, regeneration advocate, and expert at turning excess tomatoes into delicious sauces. Kia ora, Wendy. So appreciate you making the effort to come down from Auckland and be here with me in the factory today.
Oh, it's lovely to be here in this region. It was really beautiful, welcoming for the whole family.
And it's your first time in Raglan, is that right?
Yes, first time, but I feel like home sweet home, being away for a long time is like, I missed a lot.
Yeah, because you were traveling for ages.
141 days.
Yes.
And it's been in the winter entire time and it's made me homesick. And lucky back home is still got a little bit of summer left over. That's enough.
Yep. No, you've come at a good time and lovely weather in Raglan as well. So you seem to lead two different lives from what I can see from the outside. So one is a data analyst and insight specialist at ASB Bank, and the other is a rescuer of unwanted vegetables from all around the country. Talk to me about how these two worlds came to end up coexisting.
For me, it's very straightforward. It's the data. That's all about me. My life is about data. So my role at ASB Bank is actually to discover the insights from all and also tell the story from all the data that we collected in our system. So nowadays, we're talking about data. Actually, they are not only numeric digital, they're actually presenting our behavior, like customer purchase behavior, how they use their card, how they use their account properly, and also looking at the property market share. And that's about talking about demographic cultural background, how people migrating from one area to another area, and economies, recessions, and all those good parts is coming from those data. Mm. And majority is to helping our executive leader team to make what's so-called a data-driven decision.
Yes, I've heard of this.
Yeah, and the most important is for ASB, we're trying to lead the financial sector's future fit market. Mm-hmm. So we're not just looking at how we should spend money for now, but also how we future fit ourselves to, you know, not overspend the future money, but in a good way. So I love my job, but that's how I get into another rabbit hole in the food system. I call it a rabbit hole because the data from Food Waste Index report back in 2022 or 2023, it was so true, so unbelievable, but it's very disappointing.
Right. In terms of the number.
In terms of the number, how much of food that we wasted.
Wow.
And also another piece that food waste we're talking about has another definition, food loss.
Mm.
That's unmeasurable.
Yeah.
We don't even have the data for that because those food is left behind the farm unharvested.
Yeah. It's literally just sitting on the ground or on the plant and never makes it to the supermarket.
Yeah. It coexists because I have to eat every day.
Yeah.
And food is kind of like a central hub for me to drive all my energy to do the work that I love the most. I just kind of figured out there is a piece of data that connected with the things I love the most. And I think it's not a complicated issue. Like we need to go to Mars to solve this.
Yeah.
It's not like a saving our humanity has to go to Mars. But this is also not rocket science. Even my kids can solve the problem.
Hmm. Yeah. So, there's food going to waste.
Yeah.
Let's get it and eat it.
Exactly. So it's not that hard, but how can I do smart with just limited resource in the time that I have?
Yeah.
And be creative. That's driving me nuts in a crazy, in a good way.
Right. And because you started this Perfectly Imperfect while you're still maintaining your full-time job, right?
Correct.
So this was a side hustle or side volunteering project, really.
Correct. Yeah, that was the only start was tomato.
Yes.
As one focused and then realize, oh, it's not how one growers grow things wrong. It's actually the food system, supply chain. and the entire food market consumption standard has made the things worse.
Right. So it's a systemic problem, not a nice
word. Yeah, it's a systemic issue. And it's been looking even further down how we designed the food system at the beginning. It's not for the food value. It's the value for the commercial value in terms of food supply chain, and those business partner can be, you know, beneficiary from that. And we can hire more people in this, creating more employment, but nothing about the true food value.
That's fascinating. And you have a big goal for Perfectly Imperfect, right? So you want to be rescuing 122,000 tons of food waste every year, which is an enormous amount. How much of an increase is that compared to where you're at with it now? And if you could get there, would this solve our entire food waste problem, or is this just a part of the picture?
Well, to be honest, 122,000 tons of food, that's defined as food waste in New Zealand.
Okay.
And majority of those food waste is causing by the household.
Right, so that's just food that people aren't eating. It's in their fridge. It goes out
that's
of date
correct.
And they throw
that's
it.
That's correct. Because there's no data for the food lost in New Zealand. No one has collected any data. Like I said, the food is sitting in the farm. Unless you harvest them, you have no idea how much we actually lost.
Wow, so the number will be way, way bigger.
Exactly. It's like estimate about that is sitting beyond 30 to 40%. That food we grow has never been harvested.
Goodness, so much.
Can you imagine one thing? Back in 2021, one of the largest zucchini growers up the north, Kirikiri, Brett Heaps, he lost hundreds of tons of courgette because overgrow. And regular courgette, probably like 200 grams each.
Okay.
But they are not mature status. Once they mature, they grow double size every half day. And when we harvest them, when we glean them, each one of them are about like a 3K and a 5K.
Wow. So they're like marrows, what we call
marrows.
They are marrows.
Yes.
Glass.
So how you count and measure those food constantly grow over time because we're not harvesting them.
And the reason they didn't harvest them in the first place, like talk to me more about that. Is it...
The labor issue during the COVID, they cannot bring overseas pickers. The farm normally have 44 pickers from overseas, and during the COVID, they only have 4 pickers. You figure that's like only 1/10. And every year, Brett has the same issue. I Googled him, and he sounded loud on the news every single year before COVID.
Right.
But they got to solve it out anyway. But during the COVID, nobody can help that.
Wow.
Just not happening. So he has suffered, and then that was suffered down the year. I think last year he decided to sell one of his land.
Oh, there would have been so much waste over COVID in so many different ways. But this isn't a COVID-specific issue, right?
No.
So we're still having all these problems now, even though we are able to have people come back in to help.
It's just that COVID has really emphasized and zoomed in the issue because the whole supply chain of transportation has been melted down without any plan B, or there is no risk management in the food supply chain, food system. But they're like, I work in tech, startup, and also financial sectors, even medias, agencies, we have risk management policies or protocols. But in the food system, there's no such things.
That's so strange.
It is really strange. Like food has always been perishable food. Why you don't have risk management in terms of if things goes wrong, what's the next, the best option?
Yeah, that's really surprising. I did hear from you that there's some new legislation coming into play though that might help. And I hadn't heard of this before. I think it's very recent. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so it's just last week, the new government has passed a bill, and the bill has many things, and people focus the rest of things most of the time. But there's one little tiny sentence has mentioned about stock disposal, while the donor will receive the tax relief. The tax relief for the stock disposal actually had active during the COVID, but not being vast promoted. only small sectors or big corporate has noticed that and get an advantage out of it. Small companies who has donated by the good heart may not able to reach that information yet, but it's still time to fill it out for the IRD if you keep that book. But last week, what they had passed the bill, this will be permanent change on the taxation law, which means any companies who has food are not able to sell but still good enough to eat and they wanted to dispose and donate it to the qualified registered charity like ourselves,
yes,
then they can file for tax relief with ARD afterwards.
That's amazing. I mean, that would even apply to us here. We've donated yogurt for years to all sorts of different charities if we've ever had excess, but yeah, we've never been able to claim anything back from doing that. So
yeah,
that's very interesting to know.
Absolutely.
I'm sure a lot of people will be fascinated by that as well. So then that changes the incentive. So now you have an incentive to actually do something with this rather than just check it out.
Because sometimes like for food manufacturing and the grower sectors, it's very hard to define the value of their product. Like for example, the growers, the lettuce, for example, the seedlings is only 2 cents.
Oh,
and then once the seedlings grow into a lettuce, you can sell for $4. But what's the value? The labor and the water, the nutritions and all those, you know, the raw products, fertilizer put in, does it count?
Yeah, so it should really be factored in.
Yeah, so which value they should put in the book as a donation, but in terms of like other commercial food business who are retailers, they're easy to make things as a donation to make a book balanced because they purchased the product.
Yeah.
And then they donate the same product and the value just matched. But for the grower who grow from the seedlings and then become lettuce after 3 months later, it become like a $4 things. And then that was only costed them like a dollar, like 20 cents. So now they can just value it a lower market value. So they put in $2 as a donation value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Kind of like the wholesale value.
Exactly. Yeah. But it wasn't existing
before
at all.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So that's quite good news then for organizations like you and for food waste in general.
Because this is not something new, but it's just new to New Zealand. New Zealand is a little bit behind, even though we have good Samaritan Act, but it's not cutting down to the tax relief sector. Good Samaritan Act in Australia, China, Japan, and the UK, and America, Canada, they all has tax relief put in there. But in New Zealand, it's only say if someone has eaten the food that you donated it, you will be excluded by liabilities. But people freaking out about that, who wanted the liability. That doesn't sound right.
No.
Not positive promoting to do the good things, but yeah.
Okay, so we've got a bit of room there to improve.
Definitely.
And catch up with everyone else.
Yeah.
So I know that a lot of your work is directly with farms, like you're talking about the food loss and waste actually on farm. Can you share more about how so much waste is created in the first place? You gave some examples before about COVID and overgrowth, but just more broadly, what are some of the issues? And the standards that consumers and supermarkets expect from food, because I know that's one of the major issues, right? We want a perfect-looking carrot and a perfect-looking cucumber, and we don't accept anything with a lump or a bump or whatever else, even if it's perfectly good to eat.
Yeah. Like I had mentioned before, our current food system is really built for supply chain and all those commercial standard for the food is meant to how they safely deliver it from point A to point B. Like avocado, for example. Avocado, if you look at the Avocado Association, has those standards for domestic market and the overseas market. And there's a tag 1, 2, 3. And the funny thing is the size of the bump on the outlier scale.
Oh, yeah, okay.
How big they are. Actually, the higher they are, the bigger bumps they are because it make them bump each other when the delivery happens in the box.
Oh, okay.
Because they set it in the crate.
Yes, and then it's jostling around.
Yeah, just like munching each other and then it make the skin bruising. And then, you know, avocado cannot braising them on the side. So make brownie after they actually ripe. And avocado going through the ripening facility, it have to. It cannot be naturally ripened in open air.
Yes.
All avocado sell on the market has been through the ripening facility.
Right. So they started green, they went to a ripening facility and then go to the market.
Mm. Yeah, that's the procedure, protocol.
You're saying that the smooth-skinned avocados are more appealing
and more safe and more cost-effective in terms of supply chain. And also something like cucumbers. We know most of cucumbers has been wrapped with plastic.
Yes, which is
awful. The reason for that is that the water of the cucumber has evaporated in the first 3 days, 70% of them.
Really?
70% of the water evaporated within 3 days.
Oh, so it's actually to contain the water.
That's what they
say. Not to protect the cucumber.
Yeah, but if you grow the cucumber in the garden, would you actually wait 3 days to eat it when you harvest it?
No, you eat it straight away.
Correct. So is our how we consumption the food behavior is quite long.
Mm.
Like the farm is somewhere down the South Auckland and it's all in a greenhouse and then they harvest it and they have to pack and then go to the central distribution center if it's a supermarket or going to the auction place. And the next day, at least it took like 3 days get on the shelf.
Right.
It's not that easy.
No.
And how many days will get to the basket when you come to the shop?
Yeah.
It's very random. It's
sitting there on a shelf.
Exactly.
And then someone's got it sitting in their fridge. And
especially when they put a market price like $7 each. Mm. It's sitting there forever.
Mm.
So they have to plastic wrap it.
Yep.
It's not for the goodness of the value of food itself in general.
Mm.
So that costs lots of food waste because of that, because plastic is not generally good. And also environmental issue, even though they say it's recyclable, but we know how a recycle system here in New Zealand is not really good.
It's not working. Yeah.
It's not.
So then are you then saying that because then they have to design the system for packaging the cucumbers in the plastic, that certain cucumbers, I don't know if they were too short or too long or they had big bumps on them or something, then they might not even go through the system so it's like, oh, those ones have to go. We can't wrap those in plastic.
Yeah. And also the wrapping machine has a speed, has a speed limit. So the good wrapping machine can wrap 70 cucumbers per minute. That will cost you $200,000 investment.
To buy the machine, wow.
Yeah, to buy the machine. And not to mention, you know, in electricity and also the plastic wrap as a material, that's all the cost, right? You still need someone to watch the machine and making sure the cucumbers passing through is all good, like how they measure the tomato size.
Yeah.
And then not many small and medium growers are able to affordable.
Yeah.
That kind of good machines.
That's a big investment. So it's a lot of cucumber sales before it pays off.
Correct. So they go down to lower level ones that only can wrap for 20 to 25 per minute.
Mm-hmm.
So you figure how many cucumbers you can harvest per day during the really hot summer in the greenhouse and you just wait there to be wrapped.
Right, so then they're going off while they're waiting, and then you have wasted cucumbers that way as well.
Yeah, so there's a food waste during the packaging, and there's also food waste during the delivery.
Hmm.
And selections is based on human standards.
Yes.
Why we choose what we eat by our eyes?
It should be on taste and nutritional value.
Yeah, I mean, think that way, there is a restaurant called Dining in Dark.
Oh, yes, I've heard of this. I did it actually.
You did it?
Yeah, over in Thailand. It was amazing.
Yeah, so there's one in Auckland as well. I always want to go. I think that's a tremendous breakthrough. What you eat without your eyes, they actually worked it out best because your eating is not with your eyes anyway.
Mm.
So if we shopping with our eyes, how that would happen. So you go to the garden, you can smell the carrots, you can smell the cucumbers, you can smell the blueberries that are ready.
Yeah.
Can you smell those things when you go to the supermarket?
Mm.
No.
No. Well, it's just a bit of a, air-conditioned,
I know,
average smell, really.
Yeah. So if you cannot smell those things, they're not ready to eat. Simple as that. If they're not ready to eat, why we sell them?
Right. So you're advocating for a different way of eating or a different way of judging food.
Exactly. If we changed it, completely changed, without our human eyes to see everything and to be saying, when I see it, I accept it, then change it to when I smell it, when I sense it, I accept it. That would be a whole lot different scenario. I believe there would be no food to be able to have a chance to waste it.
Yeah.
There would be no chance.
Right.
We just don't grow that much because we don't eat that much.
Yeah, and because at the same time, right, there's food insecurity. I know that's a big issue in New Zealand. Yeah. And I've had other guests like Tanya Ashman on the podcast, and they've talked about it. So do you have stats on how many people are experiencing uncertainty about where their next meal is coming from? Because that's the weird dichotomy here. There's all this food going to waste. There's other people who don't have food to eat.
Yeah, I mean, food insecurity is a big hit in New Zealand because we don't have 500 million people. The data that we have, a little bit out of date, is 1/5. So 1 in 5 are experiencing food insecurity. And for the kids, it's even worse scenario because the family parenting has a bigger influence how the kids will eat what kind of food. So food insecurity is not necessarily say I'm hangry.
Right.
It's also definition of food insecurity, including do we have a food to good food to hosting a meal at home for inviting your families and your closer friend over. Like social isolation is also impacted.
Oh, so
by
you
the
don't
food insecurity.
Have extra. You know, there's nothing else to share.
Or you don't have a good food to share. Nobody wanted to call everyone for a party, serve them a Domino pizza. I'm saying, you know, they're not good enough, but you feel like it's quite petty. Like, you know, you go to your grandma's house, she's always cooked a good meal from the scratch. And you're just like, ugh, eating it nonstop. But can you imagine go to your grandma's place and only eat a Domino pizza?
Yeah, it's just something really basic.
Yeah, could go to, you know, a beach and have quick and go, but not really sitting down and looking forward to it.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have that established problem in New Zealand and we have all of this perfectly good food that we're growing that's not getting eaten. So we could theoretically solve food insecurity.
And food insecurity, to me, I have seen myself, even my own family has gone through that time. It's not just low-income families. No. Everyone, when you go to the supermarket today, cauliflower has a price of $15 each. And courgette has marked on $37.99 a kilo.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, back in Wellington. That was a week. And even back in Auckland, that week was about like $29 a kilo zucchini.
Crazy.
And the limes, always $40 a kilo.
Yeah, limes are very expensive. We have a lime tree at home.
Always imported from USA while New Zealand limes sitting in a warehouse being rotten.
Yeah.
Why? Why we have to mark limes so expensive? Seems like a luxury and a limited edition. But lime, just like lemon. And
yeah, they grow so easily.
And people don't even know what color of the true lime. It's yellow.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Like freaking out. It should be green. I'm like, no, that's unripened because you use for the zest. But if you want to use lime juice, you wait for it to ripen. What's the yellow?
Yeah, they look very similar to lemons. We have them side by side at home, lemon and a lime. And you have to always very carefully be like, am I getting the lime or the lemon?
So the general knowledge barrier, that's another thing causing this food insecurity. We have so little knowledge about what kind of food we actually can eat. I use can eat because literally we don't eat so many food because we haven't been told or haven't been told too much on what kind of food you should eat more.
Yeah.
Why can't we choose a border selections that already existed? And we just have to eat and try them. play with them.
Yeah, there's so many amazing vegetables and fruits out there that people just have never heard of. We have a very limited selection in the supermarket.
Exactly, and there's like so many Asian grains and never step into the mainstream market. I think that's just unfair, and like to the consumers, like we don't have even chance to look at them and it's like curious about it. Like we don't even have a chance to let the cats out of the bag. And why we have seedless produce? Tell me that.
That's a funny one. Seedless produce. Yeah, from a creation of more food perspective, seedless isn't a great idea.
I know.
And just for convenience. It's just the convenience of not chomping on a pip. That's why.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Wow. So you're clearly very motivated to solve this problem, which is amazing. You know, motivated enough that you do this on top of having a job. What drives you? Do you think that anything about your family or values or just life path so far has kind of shaped this determination?
I wasn't so sure at the beginning. I just thought there was tomato. I really like to eat tomatoes. People love eating tomatoes. But I had a diagnosis with severe depression since April last year. And I thought, why me? And doing the things that I love. And because the first thing the psychologist will tell you and all the counselor tell you, stop doing anything that you're doing now, all the work. I was like,
stop everything.
Then I'll better stop living my life.
Yeah, because you're just at home depressed with nothing to do.
Yeah, and it's because the work I do, I love it. And telling myself to stop doing it, it's like stop loving myself. But I'm trying to do that and then slowly picking on that why. And I realize the truly motivation from inside of my heart deeply is actually to save myself. The whole society make me a little bit restricted.
Yeah.
I cannot find the food I love so much back in my childhood.
Yeah.
But when I first got those marrow, I was so happy because my grandma used to cook those marrows.
Oh.
And I just cannot find in New Zealand. I just thought that it was like very specific vegetable in China.
Oh, interesting. Just because they're never for sale at the shop.
Because they never grow that much. It was like, they harvest it unless you grow yourself.
Yeah.
And it has patiently waiting it or accidentally overgrow it. And that moment I realized how many people actually have the same feeling as me living in the foreign country, but we call home, so, but cannot fulfilling our memory.
Yeah.
With simple food.
So you're also advocating for food diversity. It's not just waste. It's about the diversity and the options.
To me, the problem I'm solving is definitely not waste. It just, because someone else's definition, it become a waste. But to me, it's just as simple as a food. It's like, doesn't have find their proper basket. You know, if you think a food basket is a thing, then every food should have their own basket.
Mm.
This food is just left on the floor.
Yeah.
If you pick them up, then that's your food.
Yep. it's still equally food.
Yeah. So, and also my family, my background, like my dad is chef.
Oh.
He runs restaurants, a very typical Chinese immigration families coming to New Zealand, started their restaurant.
Do they still have the restaurant?
Yeah. It's a very successful restaurant. He used to run a new flavor on the Domino Road.
Mm.
It's very popular because it's open till 3 a.m.
Oh, I think I've been there actually, on Dominion Road, did you say? I'm pretty sure I've been there. Cool.
It seems like the only, because my dad wanted to open till 3 o'clock a.m. because there's lots of kids from China wandering during the middle of the night to find a good food, but they only can find a McDonald's.
Yeah.
They want to have a real good food.
Mm.
So that's why he thought, okay, I'm happy to open till 3 a.m. I said, that's too tough.
Well, that's tiring, but good on them.
Yeah, and everyone happy. Everyone truly enjoying. Have a middle of the night, have a hot handmade noodles and a dumplings to fulfill their stomach and feel a bit of home.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to me, everything can be dumplings. Everything can be hot pot. I just cannot imagine why throw those things away and they just like perfect dumpling fillings.
Mm, delicious. So you were selected as our first Vibe Lifter Award winner for the year. Congratulations. What will the $2,500 grant allow you to do?
First of all, thank you so much for selecting me for this one. It's incredible. I have a good plan for this one. Because Perfect Imperfect has been rolled out for 3 years. We started doing the covert. Yep. And last year we had a collaboration between Kitchen Project with Auckland City Council. And now we actually have a perfect physical shop location in Auckland.
Mm.
Right in the Albert Park.
Oh, great.
The college.
Nice.
A heritage property. You know, it's really matched what are we trying to get everyone thinking about. Our ancestor, how they lived a time without electricity, without fridge, how they're going to cook and store the food. I'm planning to use the grant to feed the university student with a different soup.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Wow, they would love that.
I'm sure with the 2,500 grand, we can feed more than 2,000 students.
Yeah.
With the soup.
Well, with your creativity and access to lots of vegetables, it'll probably be a really good soup.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool. That'll be a great event for them. I'm looking forward to hearing about it. You have to take some photos.
Mm. Yeah.
Is there anything that you've read or watched recently that you thought, wow, I have to recommend this to friends? You mentioned a book just before about food and nostalgia and memories. Any others that you love?
Every morning I swim in the ocean because I live in Bronze Bay in Auckland.
Oh, yes.
Going down to the beach, it took me like 15 minutes by walk. So I wake up before the sunrise and I dip myself into the water. It's a bit cold.
Yeah,
but it's
it
not
be.
Cold as ice cream. So you figure.
Yep, true.
And I'll wait in the water to see the sunrise.
Wow, you're doing that every morning?
Every morning as I tried it.
Amazing.
Yes.
Are you going to keep going? Like even
I think
when
so.
It's full
winter?
It's not
too hard, you know?
Wow. Okay, so that's a recommendation. Early morning cold swims.
Yes, because cold
with the
water
sunrise.
Will bring you dopamine.
Yep.
Swim in the ocean is giving life.
Mm.
So the ocean actually can give you your life, feeling the day is good. And I really feel that way because to me, live every day is a pressure.
Mm.
And now it's been gifted. So I want to keep it that way. So I keep swimming in the morning so I can still live that day.
Keep swimming, I say. It sounds like it's working for you. I like it.
Yeah.
A vegetable question. Do you think that we have an underrated vegetable here in New Zealand that should be getting more attention?
Oh, many.
Yeah?
Any like that courgette, the marrows.
Yeah, that's
they
one.
Should create, they should really introduce that in the supermarket.
Right.
Because that's two different vegetables compared to the zucchini. Because zucchini is good for eating raw. That's how they designed it. Harvest on ripen because crispy. But it's so soggy when you roasted them. People hate it.
Yes, soggy, definitely.
But when you wait, the zucchini become marrow size, not soggy anymore because less water content and much sweeter is best for baking and roasted and even zucchini noodles.
Mm.
It's two different vegetables. If even they are same.
Yeah.
The texture is different. And also kohlrabi.
Oh, kohlrabi. Yeah, that's a vegetable that I just have not made friends with yet. I've looked at them a few times and I'm like, it's a funny kind of looking vegetable. I'm not sure what to do with it. What do you do with them?
You do everything. It's a cabbage.
Right. So it's just like a little cabbage though, right? Because they're
smaller. It's the cabbage
stalk. Than-
you see the cabbage?
Yeah.
And cauliflower, they're all the same family.
Yeah.
But cauliflower is just the flower bits and the cabbage is the leafy part. And kohlrabi is the stalk.
Oh, so it's like the base of the cabbage.
Yeah, it's the base, enlarged it.
Oh, I never connected those two things together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can roast them, you can eat them raw. You can do every single cooking style with them. Hot pot.
Mm-hmm.
I did dumpling filling with those, pickles, I did raw. I also cook it in the soup and I mashed them up. It's just magic.
Mmm, kohlrabi. Okay.
Yeah,
it's an underrated vegetable that I need to try.
Yeah, it'll grow very resistantly, you know, to the insects or the other things. It's just like very strong, resistant.
Hardy.
Yeah, very hardy and very easy to grow. Yeah, you can choose different color as well. There's a purple, there's green.
But does that mean sorry, I'm getting a little off track here, but for my own personal knowledge, if you grow a cabbage, mm-hmm. do you automatically get a kohlrabi, or you need a specific type of kohlrabi cabbage and you get both kohlrabi and a cabbage on top?
No, you don't get a cabbage at all if you grow kohlrabi.
Okay, so it's just its own the cabbage thing.
Family has a different species family, and a different species has different varieties. So like a broccoli.
Yeah.
There's a broccoli. There's a broccolini. There's a gailan. Ooh. Also the Chinese broccoli.
Which one I don't know. Gailan.
Yeah, gailan's kind of like a more eating broccoli stock.
Oh.
And broccolini is tiny weeny. Actually, broccolini is the second shoot when you cut off the broccoli top.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It just that's automatically broccolini. Comes back. Yeah, yeah. Comes back for round two.
Yeah, that's round two. Exactly.
But I like that broccolini has now become kind of like a fancy vegetable served in cafes. You know, it's like, would you like this with charred broccolini?
It shouldn't be. It should be more easier access and more affordable option so people could eat it more.
But I think people didn't even know what it was not that long ago, you know? Like I've only seen it on menus recently.
Yeah, broccolini, they're actually cauliflower.
Oh.
The cauliflower is the
I haven't
butt.
Had those.
It's like the flower butts, bouquet. And then cauliflower is a different variety, actually. Mm. It's kind of like grow very loosely.
Oh.
Like cauliflower is very tight.
Yeah.
And cauliflower is very loose flower. Yeah, very nutty flavor. It's really delicious.
You are very passionate about vegetables. I love it. If people out there listening want to help with this mission, so if they want to get involved with Perfectly Imperfect, what's one way they can do that?
That's a good question because we are making a huge transformation this year.
Yeah.
Because Perfect Imperfect has been well known and there's lots of local organization wanted to partner with us to have our little boutique shops at their city. At the beginning, I just don't know how to operate that. Me flying around the state is like not possible.
Yeah.
So we're just rethinking how we're going to transform it. I'm here to calling out anyone, individuals or any organization wanting to open Perfect Imperfect, introduce Perfect Imperfect into their city or local community, hear to me because we have this awesome business model we wanted to deliver.
Okay.
A venture partnership model. Right. So what does that mean is kind of like you are the ownership, kind of like a franchise. We help you to establish the shop. We help you to lining up the local suppliers, local growers. We build it up. Mm-hmm. And for the first 4 years, every year, we will put it out 5% of share on the market. So you either can buy it from us or your local community
can buy it.
And which is mean you will have local community support you. Because that's mainly important is this shop needs to be supported by the local community, by the heart in the center. Otherwise, they'll become like another supermarket chain.
So this would be like a produce shop, right? We're talking fruit and vegetables. Shop.
Exactly.
And they're all from, you know, places that would have just thrown those away.
It could be thrown away or it could be just left behind the farm. Because if you look at the map of New Zealand, we grow all the veggies everywhere.
Yeah.
There's no desert land.
No.
But every region, even for Gisborne, has major produce of citrus.
Right.
And so nearby that region is Hawke's Bay, has the apples, right? And also there's nearby Hawke's Bay, there's Napier and all the great producers over there. And up the north of Gisborne is what? Avocado, kiwi fruit, and cherries in the Hawke's Bay. So how could you, it doesn't have any food in there and it's a huge problem of food insecurity in that region. I just cannot figure it out. You know the cherries? Even pit can make a cherry pit vinegar.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
it's really simple. And you just need apple cider or wine cider to make a cherry pit of vinegar.
Huh.
And with a different kind of vinegar, you just need a green salad and a later brand is in their area. So you have the greens, you have citrus. That's your salad bowl, right?
Yeah, you just need to know and how to do it.
Close to the coast, you could eat lots of fish. And, you know, Hawke's Bay hasn't been known of the fishing sector as well. I just don't think anywhere in New Zealand would be suffered with a food insecurity by truly.
Yeah.
It's only a matter how we eat it ourselves. Yeah.
So, okay. So you're saying if people out there are interested to start something similar to what you've done in Auckland, where there's partnerships with farmers and growers, there's a shop where you can sell the produce to let you know. Okay, great.
Absolutely. We wanted to get Perfume Perfect everywhere in New Zealand. And that's why I've been traveling to Canada and steal the idea from Feed It Forward in Toronto.
Oh, they opened a super bar. Yes.
And that's the thing. Perfume Perfect, not necessarily a food store. It's a mission to change and connect ourselves back to who we were from our ancestor view. So Food Left Behind definitely has a time stamp. But before it actually goes worse, we can change it.
Yeah.
You know, we can cook it up and extend it with delicious memories. Yeah, that's the one you shop for. Yeah.
Wow. Well, this is very inspiring. Thank you so much for making the drive and coming in and having this chat. I loved hearing your TED Talk a couple of years ago. I came to that in Auckland. And yeah, it's just really cool to talk with you in person and see where it's heading. It sounds like there's all kinds of ways this could unfold around the country over the next few years. So it's very exciting that there's someone out there dedicated to doing something about this because it is a massive problem. And we're just really grateful for your mahi and everything that you're doing.
Thank you for having me here.
Thanks for listening to the Vibe Lifter podcast. We hope that tuning into this interview has lifted your vibe. Check out reglanfoodco.com to learn more about the people and projects we're stoked to be supporting. Our bodies are true. I'll be the one to shake the sun and down. I follow through with the dish that you play.